This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
Good morning to you and welcome to CBS This Morning. It's Wednesday, February 10th, 2021. I'm Gail King with Anthony Mason and Tony DeCopel. We're going to begin with this. The opening arguments officially begin today in former President Trump's second impeachment trial. Now, yesterday, House impeachment managers drew a direct line between the ex-president's words and the violence on January 6th. While Mr. Trump's defense attorneys were met with bipartisan, confusion is the word people are using today. Nancy Cordes was on Capitol Hill during the riot. She's back there now with more on this story. Nancy, good morning. It was quite a day yesterday.
It really was, Gail. And today what we are going to see is the House impeachment managers lay out their case that this building may have been attacked a month ago, and you can still see that it's heavily guarded today. But they are going to argue that actually the president's role goes back much farther than that, to when he first began claiming that this election was rigged, that it was stolen, that it was fraudulent. They are going to say that it wasn't simply an errant comment here or there, but a campaign of lies that led to an uprising from his followers that left a half a dozen people dead.
Presidents can't inflame insurrection in their final weeks and then walk away like nothing happened.
The House managers previewed their argument yesterday.
We are going to the Capitol where our problems are. It's that direction.
Using a powerful video that walked senators through the assault on their own chamber.
We fight. We fight like hell.
Along with Mr. Trump's actions before and after.
We love you. You're very special.
He celebrated their cause. He validated their attack. He told them, remember this day forever.
Mr. Trump's defense got off on the wrong foot.
We changed what we were going to do on account that we thought that the House manager's presentation was well done.
Lawyer Bruce Castor, who specializes in medical malpractice and personal injury cases, kept diverging from the issue at hand.
Nebraska, you're going to hear, is quite a judicial thinking place. We still know what records are, right? On the thing you put the needle down on and you play it.
Senators called it rambling, a rocky start, even inappropriate. And those were just the Republicans.
President Trump's team were disorganized. They did everything they could but to talk about the question at hand.
Still, just one of them, Louisiana's Bill Cassidy, changed his position, joining five other Republicans who voted with Democrats to let the trial go forward.
The House managers made a compelling, cogent case, and the president's team did not.
Leading the House manager's case is Maryland's Jamie Raskin, who described that day in personal terms, the risk to his daughter and son-in-law who were with him at the Capitol.
She said, Dad, I don't want to come back to the Capitol again. Of all the terrible, brutal things I saw and I heard on that day, and since then, that one hit me the hardest.
The House impeachment managers will have their first of 2 8-hour days today to lay out their case, and then the defense gets the same amount of time, followed by questioning from the senators themselves, who remember all too well what happened here a little over a month ago because they were among the targets, Tony.
Nancy, thank you very much. Now let's bring in Chief Washington Correspondent Major Garrett. Major, good morning to you. So the Democrats did what is regarded as a pretty good job in reminding people of the emotion and the power and how scary that day was, January 6th. But they still need 11 more votes to move into their column if they want to get to a conviction. How are they going to go about doing that?
Well, they're going to say that what happened on January 6th was not an isolated incident, that it was the culmination of a campaign that sought to undermine the Constitution, undermine support in our country for institutions, and support for a free and fair election. And that, they will say, is a high crime and a misdemeanor. And if it isn't, then there can be no rational definition for this country going forward as to what is a high crime and misdemeanor. Because they will argue, if you're as president of the United States, the most powerful position politically in our country, and you wage a months-long campaign to undermine faith and confidence in a free and fair election, and then when a riot storms the Capitol and you do nothing to stop it, how else could that not be a high crime and misdemeanor? And it will ask Republicans to dig into their conscience and ask that question and try to come up with an answer different than the one we saw yesterday.
Do you expect the president's lawyers to engage directly with that challenging concept? The president brought up the fact that the election was, in his words, fraudulent, stolen. People went to the Capitol in his name, wearing his name on the hats, with his name on the flags. Are they going to engage directly with that complicated legal matter?
Only by accident, and because of their performance yesterday, you have to allow for possibilities that they will accidentally do something they don't intend to do, because yesterday's performance was, by all accounts, even President Trump's, a pitiful one. So that's always possible. But no, they've already said what they're going to argue. The president has a First Amendment right to talk about things he thinks are important. And he didn't incite. There's nothing directly insightful about his language on that day. They will not deal with the long-running campaign to undermine confidence in the election itself. And they will say those who committed those acts of violence should be prosecuted individually for actions they undertook of their free volition. And they'll pretty much leave it at that. And also say, oh, yes, by the way, the Constitution, the way we read it, at least, doesn't allow you to impeach someone who's no longer in office. The House managers yesterday made a very compelling case that the Constitution does. What I think is interesting about that, Tony, is I've spent 30 years in this town listening to Republicans tell me over and over about the importance of the textual, verifiable language of the Constitution and everything about the debates around the Constitution and our attachment to British law. House Democrats made that exact case yesterday, and Republicans looked at it, listened to it, and then look the other way.
What do we know about the former President Trump and how he feels about what he saw unfold on TV yesterday?
He did not like it. He was not pleased, in part because it was such a weak and rambling defense of what the president did or didn't do. Also, the president likes his attorneys to be killers, to have great presence. Those were not killers on the Senate floor. They didn't have great presence, and they barely made an argument.
Yeah, I can imagine the president not being happy that one of his lawyers acknowledged that the House presentation was pretty good. Major,
not only that, but that the country made the decision and he didn't win the election. And oh, by the way, he might be prosecuted someday. Not exactly what you want your defense counsel to bring up before the United States Senate.
No, he may have needed a good long walk after watching that. Major Garrett, thank you very much.
Sure.
President Biden's plan to reopen schools is now due to come out on Friday. Public schools across the country have struggled with COVID safety upgrades. Meg Oliver is in Philadelphia, where schools are still not open. Meg, how is the Biden administration trying to help on this?
Anthony, good morning. Sources tell CBS News the CDC is considering five areas of coronavirus mitigation, from basics, including masks and social distancing, to school cleaning and ventilation. If these guidelines are met, vaccinating teachers is not considered necessary to reopen. Here in Philadelphia, the teachers say they won't return to the classroom until all schools are safe.
I'm missing the connections with my students.
Third grade teacher David Malone has been teaching from his basement since last March.
We are going to read a story called Get Better Ned.
Do you want to return in person?
100%. Absolutely. If all safety measures are met, then I do want to go back to school.
Malone is one of thousands of Philadelphia teachers who refuse to return to their classrooms due to safety concerns.
To know that the ventilation system is working here at not just our school, but all the schools.
Malone works at Edmonds Elementary, where the ventilation system has not been upgraded.
We have very old ventilation systems in our building, and then they decide to put fans into all of the classrooms. And as you can see, there is not one fan installed into our building right now.
Most schools are getting help. The School District of Philadelphia says 183 of the 215 schools are ready to return. It says it's poured $65 million into COVID precautions, including new bathroom and classroom setups to ensure social distancing, touchless hand sanitizer stations, and PPE. $4 million has gone to fixing ventilation systems.
Is your school safe for teachers and students to return? Yes.
At William H. Hunter Elementary School, Principal Heather Mall Miller is ready to go back. Her school made a $20,000 upgrade to its ventilation system, but says that's just one element of safety.
I think that there's levels of protection, human behavior, social distancing, hand washing, things like that, signs to help support our students. We have a ton of PPE.
According to the school district, fixing the ventilation in older school buildings can be a difficult, time-consuming process. Parts may need to be special ordered, and in some cases, ductwork needs to be replaced throughout the school. 32 schools in the district still have ventilation problems. It's unclear how long it will take to get them fixed. The superintendent says they are willing to keep those schools closed until repairs are made while they reopen the rest. But the teachers union is holding out.
I feel that we all have to stand in solidarity with each other. Mm-hmm. I feel that one school goes back, then we all go back.
Is that fair to the students?
Yes, because our priority is the students, and we need to make sure that they stay safe, that they do not get sick. And we all want to make sure that also our staff stays healthy as well.
The ventilation system here at Hunter Elementary has been upgraded. The CDC says that's key to lowering viral particles that could be in the air and inhaled by students and staff. But even after fixing ventilation and vaccinating teachers, Malone says they won't return to the classroom until long-term issues are also addressed, like asbestos and mold. Gail?
Yeah, you got to get that straight. There's so much work to be done. Nobody wants to go to school with asbestos. Thank you very much, Meg. Highly contagious strains of the coronavirus are spreading across this country. The CDC has recorded nearly 1,000 cases of the three variants, first reported in Britain, Brazil, and South Africa, across 35 states. And now we're getting new insights into how the virus mutates from a team of doctors who studied one extraordinary case. Extraordinary is the word here. Carter Evans is following the story. Carter, good morning. We've never heard anything like this.
Gail, good morning. This is the story of a 45-year-old man in Boston who had a COVID-19 variant for 5 months before he died. Now, during that time, his doctors found the virus inside him had mutated, get this, more than 20 times. Now, this is an extraordinary case, considering the life cycle of the virus in a healthy person is typically only around 2 weeks. Now, the reason why it lasted so long is because the man was immunocompromised, like an estimated 10 million other Americans. But in this case, the man's immune response wasn't strong enough to fully eradicate the virus. It was just strong enough that it forced the virus to adapt and essentially mutate. Now, the doctors who treated him published a report on this in November, but the story's now getting renewed attention with the emergence of variants like the one from South Africa and the one in the UK. We spoke with one of these doctors. His name is Jonathan Lee. He says this case is shedding light on how the virus adapts.
I think this particular case is, in retrospect, a harbinger of what was to come. And I think that it just goes to show that we need to do a better job of monitoring the spread of these variants, and that only by looking for these variants will we be able to detect it. And that it's something that I think we haven't done as well up to now.
Carter, you know, this disease, this virus continues to baffle, surprise, and scare. And we're hearing a lot about those variants from South Africa and the UK. But in the last few weeks, cases in this country seem to have been steadily declining. So do you think the variants could change that?
Well, Dr. Anthony Fauci's really been warning about this. He's saying there's evidence that people who've recovered from the coronavirus can get reinfected with these variants. And that's why there's more urgency than ever to speed up our vaccine rollout so more people have some measure of protection and the virus will have less of an opportunity to mutate. It's also going to give vaccine developers time to work on boosters to better protect against mutations. But the key, Gail, is going to be doing the genetic testing to detect these mutations when they get out into the wild.
Yeah, still so much to learn. Thank you, Carter.
Much of the country faces a blast of bitterly cold weather this morning, along with a series of snowstorms threatening the east and Midwest. An icy mass of air will dive down from western Canada, reaching as far south as Texas by this weekend. CBS News meteorologist and climate specialist Jeff Berardelli joins us. Jeff, good morning.
Good morning, Anthony. Good morning, everybody. The polar vortex is going to pay us a visit, and it is not going to be a very pleasant guest, unfortunately, bringing with it the coldest air in the world right now down Canada and all the way down to Texas. We have a big blocking warm high across the Arctic that is displacing and forcing an Arctic invasion across the nation's heartland, and boy, is it going to get cold, especially as we head into Sunday morning. It's already cold, but this will be the coldest morning. Look at that, 51 below the wind chill in Fargo, 48 below in Rockford, Illinois, about 13 below in Oklahoma City, and in Kansas City, 16 below. And, you know, during the day in Kansas City and St. Louis, it's going to be colder there than it will be in Fairbanks, Alaska. Now, along this boundary, very cold and very warm air. Lots of alerts going up because there's going to be, you know, a conveyor belt of storm after storm, kind of an assembly line of storm after storm. And it's going to be ice right along the boundary and then snow to the north. So in places like Dallas and Little Rock and Paducah, it is ice. But east of that, in places like Washington, D.C. and West Virginia, it's snow and it will pile up. But it will not really get to Boston and it'll barely get to New York. And that's because it's going to run into a wall of cold and dry air. It's never too cold to snow, but sometimes it can suppress systems to the south. There is the icy accumulation to the south, and places like D.C., 3 to 6 inches of snow. Some places in Virginia and West Virginia, maybe as much as 10 inches. And Tony, if that's not enough fun for you, we have at least 2 to 3 more storms in the pipeline.
The takeaway for me, Jeff, is it could be the coldest Valentine's Day on record. So, gentlemen, get the flowers before Sunday morning. You are not going to want to bundle up and go out.
Thank you for listening to the CBS This Morning podcast.
Be sure to subscribe to get daily podcast originals.
You can watch the CBS This Morning broadcast Monday through Saturday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. on your local CBS station or live on the CBS All Access app.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to CBS Mornings on the go ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and host of the Money Watch podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary and it's not boring. It is a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and maybe more importantly, on your life. I'm going to be your financial coach, someone who brings common sense and an insider's perspective on how to manage your money and your emotions. And I promise we are going to have a little bit of fun along the way. Have a question from retirement to career changes to college funding? Just send us an email at askjill@jillonmoney.com. Follow Money Watch wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free on the Amazon Music or Wondery app.
Stephen Colbert here to tell you about The Late Show Pod Show, which is our podcast. I'm here with my producer, Becca. Becca, what can people expect on the podcast?
The extended moments, for sure.
Where can people get that?
On The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert, wherever you get your podcasts.
I use the internet.